So we've been doing a series all about becoming you, becoming the person that God has made you to be. And this is our last episode, session, talk, sermon in this series. I'll try to think of the word for it then. The whole purpose of doing this series was wanting to focus on who we are being before we look at what we're doing. And sometimes we're so busy doing a whole load of stuff that we forget who we are in Christ, who we are, who's God made us to be. And a lot of this stuff has come from a book by John Ortberg called The Me I Want to Be, which some people hate that title, some people think it's amazing. I'll leave that open. And it's a really good book in terms of talking about who we're becoming. And sometimes we meet people who we'd like to become more like. Sometimes we meet people that we'd rather not meet again. And sometimes those people are in church. Sometimes those people are elsewhere. But in terms of becoming you, and this is the main point for today, becoming you always involves others. Always. Becoming the person that God has made you to be, it always involves other people, whether you like it or not. Sometimes we have people that come to church and they kind of want church to serve their needs. But when you're looking for church, I met some people this morning that are going around looking for churches. And I remember being in that position as a student, looking for a church and saying, where am I going to make my home with a bunch of people? Where am I going to serve Jesus with a bunch of other people? And sometimes when we're looking for a church, we have the question of, will this new church serve my needs better than the old one? Because churches in general have often become the provider of services for a whole load of materialistic consumers. And that's what we are. We have a shopping list of what we're looking for in a church. How will this meet my needs? If I join your church, what will I get? And it's almost as blunt as that. What will be the return? Will you sing the songs that I like to sing? Will you provide the best care for my children? Will you change the time of your service? Because we can't make Sunday mornings, but we can make Sunday afternoons. We've had that before. Will the talks be interesting and funny? Because I like to be entertained. Will you please not ask me to tithe or give generously? Because that's just awkward. I don't like that. And sometimes church can degenerate from a gathering of disciples who are on mission together to a group of people who will get involved until they find a better offer. And we shop around. We stick around whilst church is convenient, and we get upset if people challenge us or don't treat us how we demand to be treated. And the thing is, church is inconvenient. Church is inconvenient. You being here this morning, for you, is probably inconvenient. And church is inconvenient because people are inconvenient. And remember, church is the people. I went to Mill Street, which is about a 10-minute drive from here, to pick up some things, which I'll show you in a moment. And driving back from Mill Street around the ring road to here, I just was aware of how many cranes and things there were around our city. I think I counted about 8 of them. I think it's probably over a dozen cranes. If you go around the ring road, you can just see all these cranes. And there's a whole lot of building going on in our city. And God is building a whole load of churches in our city, which is why this hat is here. So when God builds a church, it's not about the building. It's always about the people that are inside it. So it may be that you're a bit of a clown. I don't know if you can see that. They're really, really small. I need to make these a bit bigger somehow. It may be a bit of a clown. It may be that you're a bit of a caveman. It may be that you're just successful at everything. So there's a little sort of soccer, football champion. It may be just like a good fight. There's a little Mexican wrestler. It may be that you've really got the Bible thing sussed and you're like a fisherman type person. It may be that actually you don't like other people except for what they will give you. That's a little Lego zombie. It may be that you consider yourself a chief. It may be that you're just the silent type, which is a little mime artist. It may be that you're like a crash test dummy, and you're going through life just in one crash after another. Or it may be that this is a little, I don't know where I got this one from, a little Lego werewolf. That there's a kind of a monster inside of you that you just want to kind of just get rid of. See, God uses people to build church. You become you by interacting, connecting with other people. Church is the people. And so when I look around this room, or when I look around our, when I'm in life group, and I see all these people, I am so glad of the people that God has brought together to build this church. So, so glad. And when we come along to church, we have a dream of community. We all come along, we think of this, ah, oh, this is what it's going to be like. This is what this church is going to be like. We're going to have this dream of community. And I'm going to get my watch out because I've got no idea what the time is. But the problem with the dream of community is that can really interfere with community itself. In his book, Life Together, Dietrich Bonhoeffer talked about the problems of dreaming about community. And he says this, those who love their dream of a Christian community more than they love the Christian community itself become destroyers of that Christian community. It's like the vision, the dream of this community is more important than the actual community itself. And they struggle to be a part of this community because they're always going for this perfect church, always going for this dream of community that's going to be something that's going to meet their needs. It's a fantastic book if you get a chance to read it. And becoming you always involves others. And the main question I want to talk about is, first of all, you need relationships to grow. But the main question is, are you making life-giving relationships a priority? So last week, Vicky talked about making use of your time. But are you making life-giving relationships one of those priorities? Are you making time to connect with other people? Are you making time, which is going to be inconvenient, to connect with other people? See, doing life together in small groups rather than just in a large gathering is how the early followers of Jesus authentically lived out their faith. It was a way of life for them, a way of life that communicated this message of hope, a way of life that equipped the followers of Jesus to become more like him. Gordon Fee wrote this, God is not just saving individuals and preparing them for heaven. Rather, he is creating a people among whom he can live and who in their life together will reproduce God's life and character. When we gather together, and Paul talks about this in a whole load of his letters, it's like God dwells in our midst. When we meet together, God's presence is here in this place. And some of you are aware of that this morning. Some of you are aware of the presence of God in this place. And not just here on a Sunday morning, but in our life groups. And we take that presence with us. He's creating a people among whom he can live and who in their life together will reproduce God's life and character. And so these early believers, the early followers of Jesus, did not have buildings that they called churches. They never went to church. They were church. And at appointed times and places, they gathered as the church, as the people gathered together. And so God creates a people for his name among whom he can dwell and who in their life together will reproduce God's life and character in all its unity and all its diversity. And so I was thinking, well, where did they get this from? Where did they get this whole idea of being community and being together? On the last night, when Jesus was with his friends, with his followers, and we celebrate communion every month, and we always have the elements available for communion every week as well. But when we remember that Last Supper, we remember what Jesus did for his disciples, what he did for really the whole world. And sometimes we forget some of the other stuff. We forget that how he was aware of all authority and all power had been given to him, and then he served his friends. And then later on, he says this. He says, a new command I give you. So these are kind of like his parting words for his followers. And he's already been challenged on what's the most important command, which is love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength. And then the second one is love your neighbor as yourself. And he said these are the two greatest commandments. And then Jesus gives a new command. And so they're probably there with their notes going, okay, what's this new command? What's it going to be? And he just uses three words. And they're three words that have just gone through the whole of church. And they're still relevant for us today. And if you get anything from today, I want it to be these three words. And it's simply and inconveniently, love one another. Love one another. And we go, oh, that's nice. Jesus was nice, wasn't he? Jesus was nice. Love one another. The other week, I'm going to just give you a bit of context. In July, I was asked by Vineyard Churches UK and Ireland to coordinate the missions team for the churches in the UK and Ireland. And we have a team of about five of us that help our mission partnership leaders connect with churches overseas and do justice and compassion ministries and stuff overseas. And as part of that, so Vicky spoke last week, during that week before, as part of the mission stuff, I did some what we call security training. Now, I've never done security training before. And there's only so much I can tell you, which is kind of awkward. But it involved risk awareness and risk avoidance. So if you're taking trips overseas, if you're taking a group of people from a church, are we aware of some of the risks? And do we know how to avoid some of those risks? So I think sometimes within churches, we can be a little bit naive and go, oh, yeah, we're going to go over to this place. It's going to be wonderful. And then sometimes it's not, or sometimes awful things happen, because sometimes there are places in the world, it won't be a surprise, where it's chaotic and it's difficult and not everybody wants you to be there. And so as part of this security training, it involved sitting in rows, being taught some stuff, and then it involved some practical time. And it was all about things like how do you help people get out of a car that's crashed, because most people that travel overseas are injured during, most injuries are through traffic collisions. And so it's how do you deal with that? How do you also deal with checkpoints and being taken out of a car by gunpoint? How do you get out of a car when there's an enemy fire going on around you? So it wasn't your normal day kind of in the office. And it was really intense. And it culminated in a scenario of hostage taking. And so there were 16 of us all together, and we did it, you know, four people in the car each time, and we came to an ambush really, and we're taken out of the car, and the simulation involved the person who was driving being shot, and then us all being laid on the ground and having a hood over your head, which was a weird experience, and then being led through to one place and then led through into an interrogation room. And going through this interrogation with somebody who's got, you know, the whole full, you know, the lights, the balaclava thing, and just the aggression and the feeling of powerlessness in all that thing. And then after the interrogation, the hood was put back on and I was led out, feeling completely powerless, but at the same time really annoyed and angry and cross, and then taken into this like 3-meter-square stable. And then the hood was taken off and you're told to sort of stand against the wall, not to talk. And I'm there in this room on my own thinking, I know this is just a scenario, but this is really scary. This is really weird. It was probably about 5 minutes until the next person was brought in and was stood next to me, and we were told not to talk, and then the door was closed and all the light was gone. And then 5 minutes later, another person was brought in. All in all, at one point, there were 14 of us in this room, standing there with our hands against the wall, just thinking, okay, what do we do next? Because nothing prepares you for that. And it was at that moment, I was thinking, These people in this room with me, when I first met them, they were all strangers, apart from one person who I knew. But in that moment, these people became really, really special to me. In that moment, that whole thing of love one another, I feel it a little bit with you guys, obviously, because this is our church, but that sense of we're in this together, there's a sense of commitment to these people who I don't really know very well. There were some people from South America, there were some people from Germany, from other places around the world, and suddenly these strangers became people who I was aggressively compassionate for, you know, fiercely loyal towards. Eventually the scenario ended and there was a time where you could, you know, talk about, well, what did you experience? What did you feel? And we all sort of shared, you know, sometimes it was the powerlessness, it was having the hood, which was awful and kind of claustrophobic. It was not knowing what's going to happen next. It was not knowing what was happening to the other people. But it was just reminded so much of being in that stable, being with these other people, just the importance of community. And having a mission, having a sense of us in this church, because actually I don't think I was thinking about you lot, to be honest. But afterwards I was thinking, well, we're on a mission together. And there is an enemy that wants to take us out. But we're in this together. And there's, in terms of loving one another, there is a loyalty and a devotion to one another that we have. And Jesus is building this church with a bunch of people. Jude and Mark did the Connect lunch the other week, and she used a word of, in terms of when the Vineyard first started, it was a bunch of misfits. And when I look at us, and I look at these sort of Lego people here, we're kind of a bunch of misfits. You know, no, I'm a champion. I'm a success. But we're all so different. And that's part of the beauty of church. It's part of the beauty of what God's doing. So Jesus says, love one another. We're going to come back to that in a moment. He says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. You must love one another. Then he says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. There's something about community. There's something about us together loving one another which sends a message out to a broken and lost and harassed world. People see it and they notice it. And this whole thing of love one another isn't just a niceness. It's not, love one another, we're friends, all that sort of thing. It's a fierce, aggressive, furious love for one another. And that's what I felt in that room with these bunch of people, that loyalty to people who I didn't know that well, who I wanted to know, who kind of came out of that room with a real kind of sense of camaraderie, a real sense of we've been through something together and our relationship has grown stronger. So if you look around this room right now, you can do that now, you can look around all these people are a gift to you. If you want to become the person God has made you to be, these people are here with you on that journey to help you to become the person God has made you to be. And they're inconvenient. Because sooner or later, they will do something that will annoy you or upset you. Sooner or later, they will let you down. Sooner or later, you will need to forgive them. Because that's who we are. And it's not like, we're just going to be losers together. We are training ourselves to follow Jesus. We're living life in the kingdom, but we're living in that now and not yet, that incredibly inconvenient in-between time between the death and resurrection of Jesus and the return of Jesus. And we're triumphant, but we're also groaning. We're living in that we're contradictory people. We're living in that awkwardness of being in the now and the not yet of the kingdom. And so community is really a gift. And throughout the New Testament, as new churches were forming, the pastors and these church planters, the leaders of these new communities, wrote to outline what this love one another looked like. To them, to be saved meant to become part of the people of God, that they were connected to one another. And so they use this word allelon, which is this one another word. And so again and again, I'm not going through all of these, but Paul and James and Peter and whoever wrote Hebrews kept on pushing on the one another's. So be devoted to one another. Being devoted means that loyalty, that faithfulness to one another. Encourage one another. Be kind and tender-hearted to one another. Forgive one another. Teach one another. And sometimes we want to be the ones that are teaching others because we know more than they do. And sometimes we think, oh, you know what? These people can't teach me anything because I know everything. And that's a dangerous place to be. I am constantly being taught by other people and I love it. I love being taught by new people. I'm always interested in meeting new people and finding out about them and thinking, what can I learn from this person? I met somebody the other day who their job is specializing is he's an engineer and he does conveyor belts that sort out the solid matter of effluent from the water element. I thought, when am I ever going to get a chance to find out about all of this? It's just one of those things. So I was taught a few things about that, which is interesting. We're to serve one another humbly in love. We're to bear one another's burdens. We're to confess sins to one another, pray for one another, practice hospitality towards one another. I love the fact that whenever there's new babies born, people provide food for, is it a week, 2 weeks? And it's just one of those things. It's what we do. It's not, well, it is inconvenient, but it's like, well, that's what we do. We love doing it. We encourage one another. If, as you look at that list, what's one thing that jumps out at you? What's one thing that the Holy Spirit is saying to you or nudging you, saying, how are you doing on this? How are you doing on bearing another person's burdens? How are you doing on that whole pray for one another? And I don't want that to be I should do this. We talked about that the other week. But do you want to love one another? Do you want to be devoted to one another? Do you want to be community? Because community is a gift. And this is a photo from, I think, last year from one of the baptisms. And I love that photo. That whole sense of community around the baptism pool where a new person is saying, yes, I will follow Jesus. And saying it publicly. And dying to an old way of life and coming back up out of the water and saying, I'm going to live for Jesus. And then just the community around us celebrating with them. And if you want to go through that, we've got an opportunity Easter Sunday. If you want to be baptized, that's we always do it every Easter Sunday. We do a baptism service. Come and talk to us afterwards. But community is a gift. And I want to talk through just five areas in which community is a gift. One is the gift of connection. Sometimes people ask us, why do you make such a big deal about life groups? It seems like you're always going on about life groups. Why is it such a big deal? And there's several reasons. One reason is, as this guy, Gilbert, somebody or other, wrote in his book, Community 101, he says, it's in small groups that people can get close enough to know each other, to care and share, to challenge and support, to confide and confess, to forgive and be forgiven, to laugh and weep together, to be accountable to each other, to watch over each other, and to grow together. It's in small groups that you get close enough to do that. Then he says this, his personal growth does not happen in isolation. And some of you who are more introverted, like I am, that's like, oh, I wish it was a bit more in isolation, because I like it when it's just me and Jesus. It's inconvenient having all these other people around, but it doesn't happen in isolation. Personal growth is the result of interactive relationships. Small groups are, he writes, are God's gift to foster changes in character and spiritual growth. The small groups, the life groups we have in this church, are our way of looking to develop authentic relationships where people can become more like Jesus, where you can be equipped to live life as a follower of Jesus. It's so important to us. Connectedness is really the foundation for growth. There was a guy called Robert Putnam who was a social researcher. He worked on this whole thing called social capital, which is kind of how the networks of relationships among people who live and work in a particular society kind of enable that society to function well. And he did a whole lot of research, and he wrote an article called Bowling Alone. And in that, he made a comment. He said, as a rule of thumb, if you belong to absolutely no small groups, no groups, but you decide to join one, you cut your risk of dying over the next year in half. Let me say that again. As a rule of thumb, if you belong to no groups, but then you decide to join one, you cut your risk of dying over the next year in half. There's something about these social interactions, these social connections, that have an effect on your very health. In his book, John Ortberg, he talked about the me I want to be. He said, what if you had, as a tagline for your life groups, join a group or die? And I thought, maybe not. But it's difficult to imagine anyone that wouldn't be interested in cutting their risk of dying in half. A couple of psychologists, Cloud and Townsend, in their book, How People Grow, they write, people's most basic need in life is relationship. People connected to other people thrive and grow, and those not connected wither and die. It's a medical fact, for example, that from infancy to old age, health depends on the amount of social connection people have. Infants and older people die from a lack of relationship, and those in middle age, like me, suffer and fail to recover from illness. So when researchers look at what makes people happy and healthy, it's not so much about health or security or attractiveness or your IQ or your career. What distinguishes consistently happier people from less happy people is the presence of rich, deep, joy-producing, life-changing, life-giving, authentic, meaningful relationships. Spending meaningful time with people who care about us is indispensable to human flourishing. We flourish when we are connected with God and people, and we languish when we become disconnected. So that's the gift of connection. Then there's the gift of confession. There's something happens when you tell somebody what you're most ashamed or guilty about. And accountability is really, really important. But what it tends to do is just count all the things which are wrong. It's like a gauge. It's just like a meter. What's most important is discipleship with people that care for you. The thing about accountability is it exposes a problem. It doesn't actually fix the problem. We're told to confess our sins to one another. When we confess our sins to one another, it disarms the power of those things which are keeping us held down, keeping us away from becoming the people that God has made us to be. Just this week, I started like an early morning prayer time with somebody in church, and we're just sort of gradually getting to know each other. It's not something I've known for an awful long time, but it's so important for me. Because I know that this relationship is going to be life-giving. And this relationship, this is somebody who I can trust. This is somebody who I can tell anything to. And they won't judge me. They will correct me. They will challenge me. And I'm kind of open to that. And we all need people like that. And it may be a spouse, maybe a partner, maybe somebody who you know really well. It should be somebody that you know really well. But it might not be a partner. I'll tell Vicky pretty much anything, pretty much, I'm pretty sure. But sometimes it's good to have somebody of the same sex as you to talk to about stuff. So the gift of confession. Then there's the gift of compassion. And in order to deal with the confessions that we get, we have to have compassion. And it's grace, it's acceptance. And this acceptance frees us from legalism. When we have compassion for people, it builds trust. It provides healing and growth. Whenever we have life groups, there's always a difficult person in that group. Always. And so next time you're in a life group, look around and try and work out who the difficult person is. And if you can't work out who the difficult person is, You probably know who that difficult person is. But there's always a difficult person in a life group, always. And how are you going to deal with that difficult person? Are you going to have compassion for them? One of the very first Vineyard life groups, small groups I was in, I was on the host duty, and I went to open the door, and so the doorbell rang, went down, opened the door, and it was somebody I really disliked. Somebody from the church I used to be in, who'd also was studying in the same city. And I just blurted out, "What on earth are you doing here?" Because I really didn't like him. But over that next year, as he was part of our life group, I really started to like him. And as I got to know him, as I said, "God, you have to help me with this person. You have to give me grace because he really winds me up." I found that I actually changed, and my thoughts about him, my attitude towards him also changed. God gives you annoying people. God gives you difficult people to help you change. They're a gift. Then there's the gift of correction. And you could say maybe this is a gift of criticism. Sometimes we think, "Oh, don't ever correct me, because if you correct me, you're judging me, and you shouldn't judge me because I'm perfect and you're not." And it's the whole, "How dare you judge me?" But we're to correct one another. There is a sense of challenging one another. And in love, not like, "I'm going to be the corrector of Coventry. You know, I'm going to go around and correct everybody that I think is wrong." Let me know how that works for you. In fact, don't do that, because that will cause problems. But there is a sense of discipline and challenge, the sense of confrontation, of saying, "Look, when you say that, that has an impact on other people. Do you have people in your life that can say stuff to you and say, like, you were wrong? What you did really wound me up and other people up. And can you do that in such a way that doesn't create a huge argument?" In that same life group, I went out for a meal with our life group leader, and he did this whole correction thing that evening. And I used to do an awful lot of name dropping. I don't know why I did it. It was an insecurity thing. It was a "I'm amazing" sort of thing. It was that I'm the successful person, I know lots of important people kind of thing. And this guy Jason said, "You know what, Nick, you do an awful lot of name dropping." And I was completely clueless about it. It was one of my blind spots. But other people had noticed, and it was down to Jason to come and talk to me as my life group leader and say, "You know what, when you do this, you don't come across very good. It's not a good thing to be doing. It's not a godly thing to be doing." And at the time, I said, "How dare you? Because that's who I am. I drop names. It's important to me." But in retrospect, thinking through it, it's like, you know what, that's really, really helpful. So don't do it much. Then lastly, there's the gift of commitment. The early church were committed to connecting with one another, spurring one another on, not giving up on meeting together. They were committed to community, committed to one another. They were committed to supporting and strengthening one another. And John Ortberg writes this, says, "Every life needs a cheering section. Every life needs a shoulder to lean on once in a while. Every life needs a prayer to lift them up to God. Every life needs a hugger to wrap some arms around them sometimes. Every life needs to hear a voice saying, don't give up. Don't give up." And that takes commitment. Who are you going to be committed to? Not just in this room right now, but in your life group and those people outside. Will people on the outside of church see how you are committed to this community, how you love other people in this community, and go, "You know what? I want some of that. And actually, I need that. I need that sense of community. I need the God who cares for me. I need the God who loves me unconditionally." And so this whole thing here, this whole Sunday morning gathering, this is not enough for us. As followers of Jesus, this is not enough. When we first looked at this room, way back in November 2011, just out of shot there, you've got Rach and Vicky and Jack, because you were with us. If I moved it over, you'd be able to see it. But one of the problems with this room is all these long, long straight rows. And so this is why we have these chairs out the front here, which the setup team amazingly put out every single week. They go out to the back room there and bring these through. And it's to create that sense of community, that sense of roundness, that sense of we're in this together. If we took that out, it would feel very, very different. But even with that, there's all these rows of people. It's not enough. With a row like this, you don't interact. And so you need to group this together to do life in circles. And that's what life group is all about. This is where we're currently having our life group, which also, if you go back, red chairs, red chairs. And there'll be some more red chairs in a moment. What we do on a Sunday morning, yes, we have these rows, but we also have tables and chairs out there, and we have breakfast together. We have coffee, which is always served from 10:15. Sometimes if you get here at 10, the catering team might kindly give you a coffee. They might not. See how you go. But we purposely put that into our Sunday morning time so that people can get here from 10:15, can sit around tables, can interact, can talk with each other, can encourage one another, can meet new people. My goodness, it's really that time. And then life groups. Life groups are not adult learning courses. It's how we connect with one another. It's how we do circles, how we do all this life together. And then I want to suggest one other thing, which is what I've just started this week. We used to call them connect groups. But is there one or two other people in this community that you think, you know what, I'd like to be accountable to them? I'd like to connect with them on a more kind of intimate way in terms of I want to share stuff what's going on in my life, have them pray for me, to be, you know, maybe to take your crash test dummy, your caveman and your clown, and they're going to kind of meet together on a regular basis and pray for one another. And, you know, you might think, okay, which one am I? We used to do it in the past. We used to try and organize it for you. If you really want to do that, because no, we're not going to do that again, ask around, saying, could we meet up for coffee? Could we meet up for a drink? Could we meet up and just share some of life together? If you want that and you really are struggling, then come and talk to me or come and talk to your life group leader and say, I'd like to have that in my life. I'd like to have another person that will walk closely with me and will challenge me and encourage me. There's one person in my life who I've only met a few times, and I met him back in October, and he's somebody who, that's not me, me to myself, that would be weird. He's somebody that every time I see him, he says stuff that so impacts me. And back in October, I saw him, and he said six words. He said, how are you doing? So I was saying, this is what's going on in my life. And then he said six words that completely changed how I was feeling then, but also just what I was doing with my life. And it was this: I am so proud of you. And we don't say that nearly enough to our friends and to our family. Are we saying to people, you know what, I am here for you, I am so proud of you. You are doing such an amazing job. I'm so proud of it. I knew that this guy actually meant it. He wasn't just saying it because he'd been told to. He actually meant it. So who are you proud of? And who are you telling? For me, becoming who God has called me to be, I know it involves others. I know predominantly there's four other people in my life who I'm connected with. Oh, press it too soon. I've been on Facebook this week, and these four other people are the ones that I'm closest to. This is my family. These are the ones that challenge me, that help me to become the me that God has made me to be the most. But then there's a whole bunch of other people, and there's 80 different people. I couldn't get everybody. I just went through my list and went, okay, it's going to fit in. These are people, and you might see yourself up there, who are a portion of this church. And we are connected to one another. As God builds this church, how are you connected with other people? And some of you don't want to have your photo on Facebook, and I get that. Somebody who's not here today thinks they're Hong Kong Fui, which is really, really interesting. You can learn a lot by seeing what people put on their Facebook. So be aware. But to finish off with, if you're looking for a church, don't join a church. Be the church. If you want a church that will focus on serving the least in our community, then be that church. If you want a church that will be committed in developing authentic, life-giving relationships, then be that church. And finally, if you want a church that will help you and others to become more like Jesus, then be that church. I wonder if we could stand and we're going to pray together.